Blog Talk Radio.
Someone singing, I can tell, sing it. Life is a song worth singing, why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand, use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan, change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald DeSay. And today's date is April 1, known as April Fool's Day. But I hope that we don't have any more tricks being played on us. But we'll get into that a little later in our show today. Ladies and gentlemen, you know if you join us on a regular basis, that the slogan for this show, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation and design companies to address the effects of higher energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the underemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the effects of economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, you join us on a weekly basis. You also know that this show is brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BCLF HBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Now, I have to pay the bills, ladies and gentlemen. Our listening audience, you know that call-in number. You join us on a regular basis. You know that number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to let our listening audience know that we have a very exciting show for you today. If you join us, you can join us by logging on to changepc.com on the World Wide Web. We're also streaming over Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We're broadcasting live over Blog Talk Radio over the World Wide Web out of beautiful Tacoma Park, Maryland, right outside of our nation's capital. We are very, very blessed, ladies and gentlemen, to have a gentleman who I would like to be able to use the term, say, friend, a very, very dedicated servant to the residents of the District of Columbia, who is a Washingtonian, Mr. Ted Tarbell, who is the director of our department. It's called DCSCU, and I'm going to let him explain that. But he also has a young lady who works there who's in community outreach engagement, community person there. And we're going to talk about something that's very, very dear to my heart in the renewable energy field. I also want to let Ted and the young lady know that we also are very blessed to have Mr. Willie Shirley calling in from Jackson, Mississippi, who was the proprietor of Sundial Solar. He was the first African-American to own a solar company in the state of Mississippi, and who's been working on workforce development projects in the state of Mississippi targeting the African-American community. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And we're going to let you sort of introduce yourselves to each other and to our audience. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning, Ron. How are you today? And thank you so much for having me on the show. Having me on the show again, I should say. I know I've been on the show a number of times. It's always a pleasure to come and speak with you and your audience all over the country, all over the world, to talk about what we are doing in the renewable energy space here in the District of Columbia. As you mentioned earlier, I'm Ted Trebue, and for the last 8-plus years, I've been the director of the D.C. Sustainable Energy Utility. And we run the city's energy efficiency programs and solar programs for all of our residential customers, commercial customers, hospitals, institutions. But our solar efforts are exclusively focused right now in the low to moderate income community, income qualified residents. And so that's what we'd like to talk about today.
Well, Ted,
along with me, as you mentioned, is Ilana Bowen, who runs our workforce development initiatives.
Yes.
And a lot of those workforce development initiatives revolve around training people to actually participate and work in the solar industry. It's not just solar installations. There's a whole lot of work that goes on with solar before you can actually get to somebody's roof to do the installation. You have to go through a permitting process, an engineering process. You have to do the diagnostics on the home to make sure that it's suitable for solar. And then on the back end of the installation, of course, there's more work involved as well because you have to maintain the systems, make sure they're operating properly. And so we're training people in all different array of activities within the renewable energy or solar space here as it is in the District of Columbia. Ilana, you want to say hello?
Sure. Good morning, everybody, and thanks for having me, Ron. I am Ilana Bowen. I'm a community impact manager, as Ted mentioned, for the D.C. SEU, and we mainly focus that we would like to serve our D.C. residents and make sure we're able to provide them the opportunity to put them on green career pathways. So thanks for having us, Ron.
Well, I'm happy to have you as well as Mr. Willie Shirley. Mr. Shirley, would you introduce yourself and please sort of share your information and your background and what you're doing, some of the outstanding things you're doing there in Jackson, Mississippi?
Yes, sir. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, we
yes,
can.
We can hear you
loud and clear.
All right, good. So my name, again, is Will Shirley. I'm the proprietary owner of Sundial Solar Power Developers. The company actually has been in business since 2009, but because we're in a regulated market, the company didn't do so well. I bought the company in 2016. And we journeyed, we modified our approach in this regulated market in Mississippi. One of the big things that, one of the most important requirements, as was mentioned earlier, is training, workforce development in the area of sustainable energy, sustainable renewable solar. So, that became, when I bought the company, that became one of our major projects because how could I renew or modify a company in order to be successful without trained staff up and down the employment scale. So over the past several years, we've been pushing for that to happen. We finally have come to some agreement with Tougaloo College. That's HBCU, one of the originally black colleges and universities in the state of Mississippi. And also, we've made some gains or progress with Hines Community College just here recently. So now things are looking better. Our process now is to introduce to both of those entities a qualified curriculum that we want to have provide to students in this area. So that's been one of our major concerns.
Okay, well, Mr. Shirley, I'm going to sort of tie this together for our audience. What I want our listening audience to understand that we live in, folks who live here in what we call the DMV, the Washington, Maryland, Virginia metropolitan area, are very blessed that we have had rigorous support from advocacy groups such as Neighborhoods United, Groundswell, advocacy groups and stakeholders in this renewable energy, and we have what we call a deregulated market. And because of that, we have a legislation that has been passed, and that brings me back to where I wanted you on, Ted. I want to know, in 2019, the Omnibus Act of 2018 was passed by the D.C. City Council. Mayor Bowles has signed that into law. Since that time, I've had the privilege of listening to the Director of the Department of Energy and Development, Tommy Wells. He recently spoke at the D.C. Chamber of Commerce, Vincent Orange. They had him there, and he did an excellent job. Now, he was talking about the establishment of the Green Bank of Washington, D.C., is now capitalized at $115 million. We have a program.
That's the ultimate goal. They don't have that much money yet, but keep going on.
Yeah, but that's what he said. I'm just parroting what I heard.
They're just getting stood up right now. But yeah, it is. Tommy is correct. It's the ultimate goal to have about $150 million in capitalization.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what I am very, very concerned about is I know how hard you worked, Ted, and I know that this Solar for All program was basically your baby. And I know that you work with a lot of the grassroots movers in this town, Daryl Green, and how y'all got this thing started. And I'm very, very, very concerned when I look at the D.C. Infrastructure Academy, which has been established. I've had the privilege of having the head of the Department of Employment Service, Dr. Hughes, on to talk about the D.C. Infrastructure Academy. I've been to the facility, state of the art, 2350 Pomeroy Road. Been there over a year, been open. A lot of people don't even know it exists. I look at the outstanding work that's being done by the Mark Davis's WDC Solar of this world. I look at the outstanding work being done by the Damian Strawn's ARS consulting firms, Boat Energy. The peer consultants of this world, Dr. Lillian Abrams, I look at the bigger picture. I look at, you can go to any online Indeed, ZipRecruiter, Jobs to Careers. You put in a DC zip code, area code, anyone, and put solar energy in, and almost thousands of jobs appear right here in our area. But our community, the African-American community, we're at the bottom of the barrel with the skill sets for being able to take these positions. So I did a
perception. Well, Ron, let's compartmentalize it for a minute, because you make a real, real good point. You mentioned three or four, five different organizations out here working in very, very similar spaces. Let me tell you what we've been doing since 2012, when we really started our solar initiatives here in the District of Columbia. We made a decision in the middle of the year 2000, or very early in the year 2012, that we were going to start to install, for the first time ever, solar systems that would be absolutely free of charge to the income qualified residents in the District of Columbia. And at that time, we were using 60% of area median income as the income threshold. Now we use 80% of area median income, so we can serve more
residents. So we're talking solar for all.
Right. Well, this is before Solar for All came out. This is the original DC Sustainable Energy Utility offering a solar program. This predates Solar for All. Solar for All kind of grew out of this.
Okay.
I'm telling you how we got it all started.
Okay. Go right ahead.
So what we did was we worked with a lot of the people that you just mentioned. Darryl Green and his company worked with us. Mark Davis with his company, WDC Solar. They worked with us. We got residents in the communities and did some job training that summer, collateral to the solar installations that we were doing, because we knew that we would need, you know, sufficient people to do the installations. And as I said, there's a lot of work that goes on before you can get on the roof. And that's engineering work. We worked with peer consultants and some of her engineers to help us do some of the engineering. This was a community-wide effort. And then what we did before we even started to do the installation, we took a look at a map of the existing installations in the city. And as you probably would understand, in the wealthier communities in the city, there were hundreds, if not, you know, over 1,000 solar installations. But as we looked at our communities in Ward 7 and 8, which represents a quarter of the city on the eastern side of the city, there was less than a dozen solar installations in that entire section of the city. We looked at Ward 5, northeast D.C., just about the same situation. There were about a dozen solar systems. Whereas in the western parts of the city, wealthier parts of the city, you had, as I said, over 1,000 systems. So we said we would focus our efforts in the first couple of years in Wards 5, 7, and 8. And each year we set the first year particularly, we set a very modest goal, because we've never done this before. Our organization was less than a full year old. People didn't know who we were. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm getting a clicking noise. So I'm trying to see where that's coming from.
I'll keep going, though. And so, we didn't have a lot of marketing money. We had no marketing money, basically, to go out and tell the community what we were doing. Primarily, we operated on word of mouth. We operated through the religious communities in these wards to get the news out that we were going to come in. It was a legitimate offer that we would need to, you know, get up on your roof, get into people's homes so we can tie the systems into the panel boxes, et cetera. And the program took off with a success that exceeded our expectations. That's about the best way to put it. We thought we could install 30 or 40 systems in that first year. We did about 82. By the time Mayor Bowser was elected 3 years later, she said, hey, can you up this to 140 systems a year? We said, absolutely. You know, Mayor Bowser, we're happy to do this. And at this point, we can take a look back, because we've been doing this work now for about 8 years, and we can point to over 500, 600 single-family systems that we've installed. Last year, we also installed about 83 what are called community solar systems. These systems are very important, because a lot of people, you can't get solar up on their roof, or they might be in a multifamily building. And what a community solar system does is allows that resident to get the credits from a large system that might be built on top of a school or a warehouse or, in very rare instances, an open field here in the city.
Well,
and
Ted,
so and these credits will cut their electric bill in half, which is a significant savings to our residents. Yes.
I want you to finish that, but I want to sort of put this in a context, because when I have you on here, I bring you on here with a purpose in mind. My purpose is to have you here today is what do we do about getting our decision makers to put more money in the pipeline for DCSEU, the companies, and the needs of the community, because we know one of the major problems you got is roof repair, and I knew it was a major issue. And wards, and our wards, and when we went, because I went into all 8 wards with Neighborhoods United to the infomercial sessions. They had an outstanding community education process. To educate the people, because you can't just go walk into our neighborhoods and knock on our doors and think somebody's going to be coming to the front. No, it's just not going to happen in Alabama.
Right. Come to the front door and say, I'm going to install this system on your house that's worth $12,000. I'll do it for you for free. I've been down that road before. I'm not falling down that old hill. But it's a legitimate offer, and you're right. It did take a lot of community education, and it still takes continued education to get people to understand that the offer is real. It's legitimate, and the savings are immediate
once that system is
installed.
Ted, this is the problem I'm having, and I'm having it because it's a national problem. That's why I asked Mr. Shirley to come on this show with us. I just spoke with, and this is not in the district, this over next door in Ward 9, where I'm at, over in my state where I'm paying these taxes. I talked to our Assistant Secretary of the Department of Labor, Department for Labor here in the state of Maryland, Mr. James Rakowski. And we were at the University of Maryland at a energy summit put on by the Maryland Clean Energy Center back in, January, December. And he was telling me, he said, well, look, the state gets $110 million from the Department of Energy this year. He said, the problem I'm having is that they've only programmed $8 million to be spent for workforce development training in the state. And they haven't determined how that can be spent, but we don't have the 2 pilot programs, which is Power 52, which is run by Mrs. Sherry Brooks out of Ellicott City, and you had Mr. Eli Allen with Civic Works in Baltimore with workforce development projects. We got 24 counties in the state, but we only got workforce development training for 13. Programs for 13. How do we engage our legislators? And I understand that this C-19 piece, which this coronavirus thing is, it's changed everything. And it's
right. But Ron, I'll say this: our legislators are waking up. Hold on. Our legislators are waking up here in D.C. In the law that you discussed that just was passed, it doubled the amount of money that doubled the amount of money that we have for energy efficiency programs here in the city. Some of that money is going to the Green Bank that you mentioned. Some of it's coming to us to expand our workforce development, our renewable energy programs, and our energy efficiency programs. So I will say our legislators here in the city stepped up to the plate. I'm not going to talk about Maryland. I've never lived in Maryland. I've never lived outside the District of Columbia, so I'm not going to say anything about Maryland. But we stepped up to the plate here in the city, and I think our legislators should be complimented for what they've done.
Yeah, well, I don't have a problem with that because we give credit where credit's due. And that's what I wanted to speak to, because I'm looking at the fact that till Van Jones got the green jobs codified by Congress, last time I checked, out here in the District of Columbia, everybody got to come to the big house. You got to come to Washington, D.C. We're here.
Well, see, but we're not using federal money for this, Ron. Understand?
No, I understand
this is all
that,
local
but I'm
money
looking
that we're
at
using.
Public policy. What you do, Ted, is so important. And with your the young lady, with you,
mm-hmm.
what y'all
yeah.
do is so
and,
important.
And I want to let Alana talk for a little bit because it's really important to understand. We're getting more money. We could use more money. I'd be the first to say I would love more money. We have about 20 people in our current cohort, 19, I think, of trainees. I would love to double that, to triple that. I need more money to do it. But Ilana and her group have been putting people in full-time jobs at a rate of about 90% of our graduates are going into full-time jobs. And that, as you know, Ron, is an incredible statistic for job placement programs
and
workforce development programs.
That,
it's incredible.
And
statistic.
What?
And so,
what
so
you doing
I'll let
here?
Ilana talk a little bit about how she's doing
yeah.
the magic that she's been able to accomplish. Because it's an
well,
important lesson for the rest of the people around
yeah,
the country to understand how we've developed this model.
Yes, that's right.
Go ahead, Ilana.
But what? Come right on into this conversation,
sure.
young lady. Sure.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah, I'm happy
Ilana,
to
yeah, talk
to
a little
talk
bit about the
it.
Program and how long we have the trainees in and stuff like that.
Yeah,
yes,
and Ron, I think you'll be pleased to hear and your audience to really understand the difference of our program and how we get to that 90% level. So the workforce development program that we run, it is a smaller group. We bring in around 20 externs or students, as we call them, for a five-month externship. And the reason this is different than some other apprenticeship programs is we're out on the job training. So we're partnering with these WDC Solars and other companies under the energy efficiency industry to ensure that these individuals are getting training ranging from being in the field, soft skills, engineering, mechanical and electrical, project management, the real A to Z of what it takes to be in a green career. So we're looking at that long-term career, not just the job. How can that person progress over 10, 15, 20 years? And we really are also bringing them in once a week to make sure that they have that soft skills training, resume workshops, interview workshops, making sure that they're getting national certifications at no cost to that extern. So they're taking those renewable energy courses, they're taking the NAPSEPs and more to make sure that once they graduate from our program, they're able to go up that green career ladder. And the real end goal of our program is that every extern does gain employment, whether it be at that host site after the 5 months, or how can we work with them within our network to ensure that they're able to have that employment post graduation. So we've been working hard at this for, like Ted said, over 5 years now. We've graduated over 65 externs with a 85 to 90% graduation rate, where we're getting them out in the field. Right now I have crew leaders out there that started not even knowing how to use a toolbox.
Well, I see you have
externs. Let me ask you a question.
On
the extern program, how does that the word extern rather than intern? Can you explain to me how that the program function of that?
Sure. Yes, and that's intentional. So the reason we call them externs is because they're out in the field. They're not coming to DCSCU every day for training. That's the real value of our partnership with our host sites. We want them out there.
They're working
with that
in the city. They're working throughout the city with the host company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we get Ilana lines up a number of host companies who work with us, WDC Solar, peer consultants, et cetera. And they
right.
and the employees, we pay their salaries, but they work on site out in the community actually doing the work. It's on the job training. Yeah.
Okay, so
five months.
Okay, so now is that
you think of an intern? An intern is something. you know, an intern would be someone who's in your office every day. These people only come in once a week, as Ilana said. They come in on Wednesday morning. Other than that, they are out at the job site every day of the week.
Gotcha, gotcha. Now, and this is the program is funded for those trainees for 5 months?
Yes. Every trainee is working 40 hours a week. They are at that host site, as Ted mentioned, and they do come to us once a week on living wage rates that we make sure that they also are able to receive those national certifications at no cost, as we mentioned. And it's a five-month externship for the reason that we call it an on-the-job interview. So that mentor has the opportunity to groom them, train them, with the expectation of hiring after that 5 months.
Okay, I just want to make one other statement real quick.
Yeah.
And that statement is that I personally need to look into those programs. Because I am structuring a workforce training program here in Mississippi, so I got a curriculum. You know, I've got curriculum items that we're looking at. I've got verified curriculums that we're looking. Other folk are using, but I definitely need to look at you all's process. If that's not a problem.
Well, Mr. Sherrill, you'll be able to find that information. The link is on our website under News and Events. You can go down,
okay.
And it talks about that, and it'll tell you externs are paid a living wage to 100% sponsored by DCSEU for the duration of the externship, 3 to 5 months on the average. Externs work through a professional development curriculum weekly at DCSEU meetings. Earning course credits toward NAACP, PVA, and LEED-GA certification while practicing on-the-job training at their host sites. Host gets the opportunity to mentor the individual new to the solar industry with a commitment to potential hire that person at completion of that externship. So you'll be able to find that right up on the website. Now, I want to sort of get to some other things with you, Ted, and the young lady. Now, we have so many blessings in the District of Columbia, and that's why I brought up the D.C. Infrastructure Academy. You also have the Four Walls Academy, which is located right next to Gallaudet. And now I had the privilege of having Dr. Hughes, the head of Employment Services, to come on and talk about those different programs because they fund both of those, work with them and fund both of those projects. What kind of coordination does DCSEU have with UDC, the DC Public Schools, and those type of programs, Ted?
We have coordination with UDC. We actually do a number of projects with them. We don't have a direct linkage to the D.C. public schools in terms of our workforce training programs in and of themselves. So, because I think, you know, we're doing something that's pretty unique and pretty distinct, you know, from some others here in the city. So yes, there are clearly, you know, linkages with the university, and by all means, as I've said before, we'd like to do even more with them. The university is under new and dynamic leadership. And we really applaud the new team up there, you know, for working with us. But yeah, it is it's complex work. It's difficult, and in some ways it's a big city. In some ways it's not so big, you know. But you're right, Ron. The good news is there are a whole lot of training programs out here in this space. I think not all training for the same thing. Not all training for renewable energy. Not all training for energy efficiency. That's kind of our specialization.
Well,
Academy is training for work in the utilities. That's not necessarily energy efficiency or renewable energy. The Infrastructure Academy does a great job, but it's a slightly different focus.
But I went over, Ted, into the orientation, and they do provide solar installation training. Now, it's not on a consistent basis, but they do offer that training, and they give you IT, so they have that with their curriculum. I don't know when they're going to roll it out, but I know that's one of the things. And I was just looking at with our charter schools in District District of Columbia with our talented youth. I mean, we got some real talented kids in high school here. And I'm saying you don't need a four-year degree. You don't have to have a four-year degree to get these certifications and for these young people to move with the need for electricians with their certifications for the green infrastructure. I think Tommy Wells said that the city has about $1.3 billion worth of green infrastructure over the next, I think, 20 years. That has to be done in the district. So I'm saying the opportunities that are there, and when we look at the EV infrastructure, somebody's got to wire those charging stations for these electric vehicles. I mean, we're the nation's capital. It's coming here.
Mm-hmm.
I sit there and
watch
the $15 million budget be Public Service Commission for electric vehicle infrastructure in the District of Columbia. So how do we make sure our young people are the ones that can get these positions? That's all I'm saying. And I know y'all can't do everything, but I just want to put that in the pot with the stew so we'll get a good gumbo here on this show today.
Okay, well, I'm going to let Ilana tag team with me on this answer a little bit. I'll start this way. Ron, you know, of course, our focus is exclusively on D.C. residents, exclusively. That's, you know, it's all about D.C. I've never been one who says, you know, we don't have the ability to train people or da-da-da. I strongly believe in our residents here. We have a lot of very, very bright people. We do not require a college degree. I'll let Ilana speak to some of the requirements to get into our program. Clearly, a college degree is not one of them. So we are really, you know, reaching out throughout the city, coordinating, and Ilana can tell you what some of the agencies with whom we coordinate to make sure we get a good array of residents from the District of Columbia and we're able to bring them into and get them through our programs. Ilana, you want to talk about some of the qualifications to get in and stuff and who we're partnering with?
Sure. So we are our real externs. They're coming from a pipeline of many community-based organizations. The qualifications that we really put out there is that you have to be 18 years plus of age. You have to have a GED or a high school diploma, so there is no college education required. And you have to be a D.C. resident that is either underemployed, unemployed, or looking for a career transition. So our externship cohort really is very diverse. I mean, we have people that are graduating high school, college, looking for new careers after 20 years in a different workforce. And the way that we partner and really recruit these, Ron, that's so important, is by partnering with these existing, a couple of ones that you mentioned, including the Infrastructure Academy, to build that pipeline. We're attending job fairs. We're working with universities. We're also looking at direct partnerships with community-based organizations like United Planning Organization, Aim Higher, Pathways to Housing, DC, Back on My Feet. So we're actually meeting them at the source. We're working with these case managers that are providing employment opportunities for those most in need, and we're that next step. They're able to come to our program for that training with these host sites, so then they're set up for that career. A lot of these individuals have taken some certifications, like you mentioned, or HVAC 101 or Solar 101 or OSHA, but we're that next step for them. We're that employer out there to find that host site that can be that employer in the future.
Well, this is good news to my ears. And we need some good news right about now, ladies and gentlemen, out there in our listening audience. You know that calling number. We're still here, 646-666-2948. So you can join us and chime in on this conversation. But Ted, I want to thank you for having our land on to explain and sort of break down what y'all are doing out in the community, because 30 minutes goes by real, real fast. I mean, I'm looking here, and I know y'all got to get off here because y'all got something other things to do, and I don't want to hold you, but I just want to make sure that you had an opportunity to come on this platform and talk about this program, because I saw it. I get the emails, and I saw it after they had had you had the webinar. So I did a small segment last week, but it's not like what y'all have broken down on this show today. And I want our Washingtonians and our D.C. residents to understand. You blessed and don't know it, because these programs and to have people from those community, because Ted is a Washingtonian, people who care out here leading the agency and leading the charge on your behalf to look out for our young people. We don't always have this in place. And I know that Mr. Shirley can attest to that, because I know some of the conversations we've had and some of the roadblocks and the things that he has to run up against in Mississippi that people here in the District of Columbia don't understand. Hey, when black folk in Washington, D.C., we catch a common cold, well, it's not, you know, they really got the coronavirus in a lot of other places. And I'm not saying that to be funny, because it's not a laughing joke. But this is we're talking serious business, ladies and gentlemen. This climate change, this renewable energy piece, we got to get our young people trained to be able to take advantage of this new economic green economy. And Ted, y'all are doing an outstanding job there at DCSEU. And I just want to make
Let me thank you first again for having me on. You know, you have me on about every 6 months or so, and I love being on your show. Let me leave your listeners with our phone number in case they're interested in
joining one of our
programs.
And
you
know, I want our
participating in energy efficiency. If they said, hey, I want a solar set of solar panels on my roof and I think I'm income qualified, let me give you our phone number so they can call it. You can get I'll tell you how to get a live operator, somebody who can talk to you and tell you, you know, more in depth what the program is about and how to get involved, okay?
We are at
202-479-2222. Okay, and then you hit 0, a live person will pick up the phone. 202-479-2222. And then once the phone picks up, you hit 0, a live person will come on. You know, please, you know, ask them about the programs, how to get involved. You know, if you want a solar system or how you can sign up to be in our community solar, one of our community solar participants, we have a number of different options that are available for our residents. We want to make sure that they are aware of what we're doing and how they can avail themselves of the services we provide.
Yes, yes. Well, we certainly have to do that, but I'm going to keep pushing this issue about us getting this residential PACE program in the District of Columbia, because I think it would help our folks for real. And that's locally and nationally. So, Ted, I want to thank you and the young lady for taking time.
Yolanda, thank you so much for being on the phone today.
Yolanda, thank you for taking time for your business schedule. And breaking this thing down, because what you have left, it was good news. The information that y'all are providing, our community needs to hear, and they really need to hear it now, because we don't know what kind of shape this economy is going to be in after this thing is we get on the other side of the C-19 pandemic, and the people are hurting out here. So we need to try to get information out here, because this what y'all doing is news that definitely people can use, Ted, over there at DCSEU, and I'm gonna be drunk.
And Ron, the other thing I promise you we will do, and Ilana, make sure I follow up on this. We have a graduation ceremony every time when a group of our students, you know, has finished with their work with us and they're going on to their jobs with the respective host sites. We have a big graduation ceremony. Hopefully this COVID-19 crisis will resolve itself and allow us to have that graduation ceremony. Ron, I want to invite you over to actually meet the students who are graduating, come into the office, see, you know, what we do, and really to you help us promote this as well, because that would be a real value add for us. So as soon as COVID-19 thing clears up, Ilana, I don't know if Ilana's got the graduation scheduled yet, but we'll do it at some point. It's a worthy ceremony for these students who have invested so much of their time and energy.
Okay? Let me know, and I'll meet you there. I won't meet you there, so just let me know, because you talked about trying to help the young folks, because, you know, that's my background. I come out the coaching in the D.C. public school system teaching. So if it's about trying to lift up our young folks, that's what it's about. I want to thank you once again, Alanda and Ted, for coming on this show. And Mr. Shirley, don't you go anywhere. They're getting ready to leave the air now. And I'm going to hold on. So is there anything else, Ted, you'd like to close out? You'd like to say?
No, like I said, I want to thank you again. I want to let you know that the mayor has deemed the work that we're doing with solar an essential service right now. So our people are still out in the community installing these systems as we speak. A number of larger systems are coming online either, you know, later this month or early next month. It'll serve even more district residents. The systems that we bought online over the last 12 months will help over 3,000 D.C. residents cut their bills by about 50%, cut their electric bills by about 50%. And so all I can say is, you know, we're full speed ahead with this work.
Well,
let me say this. This is where I'm so Ted and Ilana, it's been a joy listening to the progress that you all have made in the D.C. area, which is totally not happening in the state of Mississippi. I do have to let you all know that Sundown Solar is establishing a presence in the D.C. area, but not for residential solar. We're a service disabled small business owned minority company, and we're certified in that area through the military. So we'll be establishing a presence through hiring two veterans that's going to be working for Sundown Solar in the D.C. area for the purpose of federal contracting. And so by managing those folks, I expect to be in D.C. Every now and then. And so I'd like to visit your facility, look at your program, and just generally stay in contact with you guys. And I'd like to do that.
Sure, Mr. Shirley, it would be a pleasure to meet you. It'd be a pleasure to host you up here. I must say my father was born in Jackson, Mississippi, so I have a deep love for that city. And whenever you come up to your nation's capital, you know, Ron can give you all my contact information. I'm one of the easiest people to find in this city. You know, my phone, my number's in the phone book, so, you know, look me up anytime. I'm happy to talk, okay?
I'll do that, Ted. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye, Ron. Pleasure to speak with you this morning. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Alanda?
Thank you. Okay. Yes, thank you so much, Ron.
Okay. All
take
right,
care.
Then. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Mr. Shirley, it's me and you for our next segment here. We're going to take a slight pause for the calls, and I'm going to bring you back. I was hoping I'd be joined by Mr. Jernigan from Houston, but I don't know if he got the message. And Mr. Damian Strawn here locally indicated he would be calling in. But if not, me and you will be rocking and rolling as soon as we come back from the other side of this break here on Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We'll be right back. Uh-huh.
only one standing. I can just sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome, welcome back to the airways of Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. If you join us on a regular basis, you know that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone after dialing the call-in number. Now, I'm blessed to have Mr. Willie Shirley still with us. And we're going to sort of change gears, but we're going to talk about the economic impact of this pandemic on solar installation and design companies, and specifically African-American-based companies. That's why I reached out to about four different companies in different areas of the country. I contacted gentleman with U.S. Solar in Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Towson. I spoke with Mr. Damian Strawn of ARS Consulting, and it's understandable. Sometimes people get it, and sometimes they don't get it. So I did speak with Damian, and I know if he didn't have an emergency, he'd be on the air. So I understand things happen. But, Mr. Shirley, I want you to sort of speak to our audience about what's going on right now in the state of Mississippi as it relates to how this a pandemic is impacting on the state. Because I was listening to some things on the news, and if you don't talk to people locally, you won't know. But I understand that it was only one county in the state of Mississippi that the governor has put under, what we've got up this way, because the whole state of Maryland, you got to be off the street by 8 o'clock. If you don't have a valid reason, the District of Columbia, you're going to jail. So they're not playing with this. So I want our listening audience to understand everything is not the same everywhere. Every state seems like they're doing something different. So could you sort of share how this is affecting your operation, Mr. Shirley?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm sorry.
I was saying that every area, demographic area, it looks like in the country, is doing something different. And I was listening to the news, and I saw that the governor of the state of Mississippi had only put one county in the entire state basically in lockdown format. What we're experiencing here in the whole DMV market area, the District of Columbia and the state of Maryland, 8 o'clock at night, you got to be off the street, and you don't have a valid reason for going to work, a job, or you're not going to the grocery store or specific places, you can't be on the street. So that is what it is. If you pulled over, if to our listening audience, if you pull over, make sure you tell the police you're on your way to the grocery store, you're on the way to the drugstore, so you're picking up medication for somebody in your family, because if not, you may have a problem. It's a $5,000 fine in the District of Columbia. And see, they just put the city on the lockdown and the whole state of Maryland on the lockdown, and the same thing in Virginia. But I don't know what is how things are going on in other areas of the country, and how is this impacting on your business?
Well, in Mississippi, you're right. The governor has executed limited processes for people to stay home. But in the city, the capital city is where I am, in Jackson, Mississippi. The mayor, as of 3 o'clock today, will invoke a stay-at-home measure. That stay-at-home measure does not include fines or anything of that sort. But that's where we are in terms of the state of Mississippi. I like to speak a little bit about what the coronavirus has done relative to the solar industry in Mississippi, the solar market.
Please
in Mississippi.
Do.
Well,
yeah, please.
Well, the solar market in Mississippi, because it's a regulated state, is not that great from the very start, but. There's only a few companies in operating in the state of Mississippi, Sundial Solar being one of them. I think it's two others, one on the coast of Mississippi and one in the northeast or mid-state. There's another company there. So, you know, we're a state that has not realized the benefits of solar power and therefore has not created public policy to support solar power. But there is an impact on companies that are here. That impact, including our company, has to do with supply chain issues. You know, one of the major concerns in construction and solar construction, no matter if it's on the roof of a home or on the roof of a commercial entity or utility scale, you know, one of the major concerns is the supply chain issue. You have to have the equipment shipped and ready to go as needed. And without that ability to do that, with China in particular, that manufactures a good number or maybe the majority of the solar equipment that goes around the world, with that in place, and with that reality, the market has pretty much rocked completely. So we're in a holding pattern. I would assume most solar companies of our character is in that same holding pattern because of the virus. We can't interact with our customers. We can't depend on equipment, especially on large installations like multi-megawatt solar farms. We cannot rely on the equipment being there when we need it. So that is simply part of the problem. The economic output from a solar market, from at least in Mississippi, has totally dropped completely, and so right now the economics around COVID-19 relative to solar customers ready to buy and ready to go has fallen off. I suspect that's the reality for all across the country, I suspect. But here's the thing. based on my research and looking into this, you know, because, for instance, municipalities or cities like D.C., economic areas like the DMV, have already put in place standards that need to be met. I think D.C. has a standard of 100% renewable by...
Yeah, well, that's by 2030. Yeah, that's 2032. But what I want to touch upon with Mr. Shirley is the fact that you are already suffering because you unfortunately are doing business in a regulated market. What that means, listeners, is that the utility company controls the pricing, the rates from the generation of the energy through the transmission of the energy through the lines to the ratepayer, which is you, the end user, the consumer. In a deregulated market, that does not exist. Therefore, people have choices that they can, in a deregulated market, that they can decide who they want to buy their energy from. And it gives rise to renewable energy because it can grow and flourish in a deregulated market. In a regulated market, you have to fight and push to try to get, the term is called behind the meter, or you have to be able to work with the utility to see if you can get some type of set aside. So being that we're looking at how Mississippians who are farmers and people who are interested in getting into the business on the developer side as owning and developing a small scale, a large scale, 20, 30, or 40, or 50 megawatt farms that have land that may be perfectly geographically located near the grid, but they can't take advantage unless there is major state policy changes, and you must pass what they call renewable portfolio standard legislation
that sets aside
a percentage of energy that must come from a renewable energy source. And this is what the issues are that are not being discussed from a political standpoint and made clear to our communities is how this impacts on their pocketbooks. Because once you put a solar PV system on your rooftop of your house, you're no longer a consumer of energy. You are a generator of energy. So you become a competition for your local utility company. So this is the thing and the way that the game is played nationally. But being that we're in very serious times, and it seems as though we can be talking about economic development strategies, we need to be looking at how we can push to help the Sundial Solars of this world. So this is why I wanted to have you on, Mr. Shirley, to talk about the impact trying to operate a business in a regulated market has in terms of you being able to grow your business in your market area. It's like you're going to fight and they're telling you they're going to tie your hands behind your back. That's really what it is, but our people don't understand that.
That's right. And one of the things that I've done, you know, we operate, we have a public service commission in three districts throughout the state. We now have two public service commissioners that are solar supporters. I was asked by our association, our business association, our Solar Business Association, to put together a set of policies to present to the newly elected public service commissioner. I put that set of policies together. One of the first ones on there, first priority is to establish RPS for this state, the Renewable Portfolio Standard for the state of Mississippi. On down the line was community solar. So there are several initiatives that I've delivered to not only the Public Service Commissioner, but the association itself. Now, I was also able to get the association to fund a lobbyist for the state of Mississippi to kind of help push these issues. But in my opinion, the turn of the Public Service Commission on rulings such as RPS and community solar, that's going to take quite some time. So what we're doing and have been doing is going behind the meter, and that's the only way that we can the company can survive in Mississippi, and we can address our customer needs. Except, I have had numerous, and it hurts my heart that these black landowners in Mississippi cannot get their projects funded because of the status of policy in this state. It's the standard now.
Mr. Shirley, wait a minute. Black people, I hope you're listening. I hope you're hearing this man tell you, because I listen to black talk radio all day long. I listen to Dr. Kathy Hughes, this radio station. I'm an avid supporter of WOL, I Washington Informer, Afro-American newspaper. I read our publications on a daily basis to try to stay on. Mr. Shirley, nobody is talking about this issue that you are sharing with our listening audience. I want our people to understand that the sun comes up over everybody every day. And you're the only group of people, even in a deregulated market, when it's on the real tip, I can't name five solar farm, large-scale solar farm projects, and I've been in this doing this for 5 years. Now, there are some. There are a few. And I've had most of the people who built those farms on this platform. Biff Energy out of Baltimore, Maryland, Mr. Robert Wallace's firm, built the Howard County farm. It is owned by black folks. I know this exists. Okay. This is, and we're in this in the state of Maryland. I know that University of Maryland Eastern Shore has a 17-acre farm. I know Bowie State University has a 7-acre farm, and this is in the state of Maryland. Outside of that, I'm not going to say there aren't any, but I know that there's some that there have been a number of them being built in conjunction with white companies, African-American companies, to help design and build solar farms, because I know that they're busy working. So I know that the work is going on, but I'm saying where our community, where you have black owned farmland owners and black families who have land who want to own and develop their land in this arena, that's non-existent even here in a deregulated market. And it, to me, it's not making any economic sense, because we have black folks all over this country with land and resources, and we should be pushing for some type of public policy set aside in those southern states where they are regulated. It's regulated by those utilities, because I know that there are advocacy groups in the state of Mississippi that's pushing to deregulate the state. That's a war. You're fighting the major utility company with a $1 billion operation. It's like that. It's like going up the same situation in North Carolina with Duke Energy and Dominion. When you are fighting the real power structure, when you get to talking about utility companies in America, because they are just as big as the banks and insurance companies. And if you find out where they got their money invested, you find out that's where the banks and brokers got their money invested in utilities. All your billionaires and all your NFL, NBA, major baseball teams, when it's all said and done, they're all vested in some form of energy. This is not me making this up. This is facts. So it doesn't make sense for us not to be working, trying to do what we can to bring these issues to the forefront that you're talking about, Mr. Shirley, to let people know. Now, you got a black mayor there in Jackson, Mississippi.
Go ahead.
They got money. You got money coming out of the Department of Energy that comes from to the state of Mississippi. Every state in the country got $10 million for workforce development training programs. Mr. Shirley, before this program that you are trying to establish right now with Talladega and the other, how many workforce development training program, pilot programs do they have in the state of Mississippi targeted to my people, black folks? Could you please tell me?
Well, none of them targeted.
Did you say zero?
None are targeted, but it's out there, but not targeted. Those programs are out there. They're not as robust as other programs. It's like pulling teeth to get to all of the facts of the opportunity. So you really, there's nothing to that point going on in Mississippi where there's a target, there's an outcome to be reached, and there's a targeted process to get there. No, not for renewable energy.
All right. You down in the southwest sector. That's why they call it the SWAT. So I know you know who's doing business in Louisiana. How many solar installation design companies or developers do you know in the state of Louisiana, Mr. Shirley?
I know quite a few because they're part of our association.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
How many companies? How many companies is in your association?
Well, I can count. Let me count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think about 5 that I can count that I have contact with.
Okay, you got 5.
Louisiana.
Nationwide, all 50 states, including the District of Columbia, because the District of Columbia probably got more African-American solar installation companies than anywhere else in the area. We don't have...
Oh, did you stipulate African-American? I don't know if there's any African-American-owned companies in Louisiana.
Let me... How we want to refer ourselves, because I used what Jesse came up with. I refer to myself as an African in America, but it doesn't matter now.
Okay.
The bottom line is, how many solar installation and design companies people of African American descent own? I can't come up with more than 30 on my list. Okay.
Yeah,
down in
the Mississippi, Louisiana area, Alabama, this company, Sundial Solar, and that's pretty much it that I know of. Now, when you go into Atlanta and South Carolina, I'm not sure about that.
I'm from South Carolina, okay? I know how many solar companies are in Georgia. African American companies in Georgia. I got the list. I want you to send me the list of the companies that are with in your association, so I can add them to the list I got, and I'll share the information I got with you. But what I'm saying, sir, this is a national travesty. That we have all of these national organizations, and they have these conventions. They have do what they want to do, but this is not on the agenda. Nobody's talking about these issues. And I'm saying I'm gonna bust the cover on this drum with this program here. I got Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America, because this is economic insanity.
Absolutely.
For this much money to be coming out of the Senate for the transportation bill. They got $11 billion for electric vehicle infrastructure.
$11 billion.
$1 billion is for the actual wiring of high speed infrastructure for electric vehicles nationwide. They put out the Alliance on Energy had this one-day conference. I was up on Capitol Hill at the Derrickson Center's office building in January. They talked about this, what was coming in transportation, and I'm saying this. How can we have all of these historically black colleges and universities, and Lord knows I done bust the cover on that one on this platform.
That's right, I know.
With the work that Dr. Lillian Abrams with Peer Consultants has done, and the money and time and investment she's putting together a five-year green economic development sustainability plan for all of our HBCUs. I'm past tired, but I can't get, you know, I'm going to give out. I ain't going to give up because that ain't in
there. There you go.
But
there you go.
This is past ridiculous that we are having a conversation about the economic impact of solar now and in the future, and whether we like it or not, because this is what's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to build these large-scale solar farms in Mississippi, but the utility company wants to own and control everything.
That's correct.
In the deregulated markets, you still got to deal with the politics in the game. The mere fact that I've been beating this drum for 4.5 years on this platform, you just heard Mr. Ted Tarabou on this show. He's been on this show numerous. I've been doing this for 4 years, but I couldn't get a $25,000 grant so this show could be heard nationally over Radio 1. The information, Mr. Shirley, that you are bringing to our community is absolutely invaluable. Now, I want you to tell me, where do you go Now, what do you need? How do you need to move now, Mr. Shirley? Because like I said, this platform that you are on today, I don't have to tell you that I'm serious about that. I let my work speak for itself. And I'm saying to you, sir, that I need you to get some of those folks from the community down there, some of those farmers and some of those folks who want to come on the air and talk about how they've been struggling trying to get projects started and moving, so we can get this information out to people, because it makes no sense for us to have the Congressional Black Caucus on Capitol Hill, and these Negroes come in here every September, and they spend hundreds of million dollars in hotels, restaurants, and everything else, have big party. And when we leave here, we leave with absolutely nothing for our people policy-wise.
I agree.
I've got to beg Alonzo Hardy at the Department of Education to put on their White House initiative for HBCUs in September a brain trust, so I can get Dr. Abrams' program, get individuals like you to come in and talk about the need and what you can do in your marketplace if the presidents of those universities would just sign on and give you an opportunity.
Correct. Now, this is you know, for our leaders, our elected leaders, our HBCU presidents, people who are in control, who are black, who have some ability to change policy relative to black folk and solar energy. Seems to be a huge problem at accepting or knowing exactly the abundance of economic activity that could be saved by the black community nationwide. It's almost impossible for anybody to operate without energy. So why is it that when we have the chance to generate our own energy, why are we not doing it? Our leaders are not focusing on that at all. And energy is one of the biggest industries in the world.
Mr. Shirley, everything starts with energy and everything ends with energy. I coined that phrase here on this break, okay? Now,
okay.
The number two expenditures of any university after they pay the salaries from the president down to the maintenance crew is fixed cost is energy.
Correct.
You keep the doors open at these universities. And by the
way,
our HBCUs wield more power by just their physical landmass, where they're located, with the politics. Whatever these universities, if our presidents could come together around this energy, economic, green development, 5-year sustainable program that Dr. Abrams has designed for them, and implement these initiatives, she would create more work for companies like you would be a multi-millionaire in 10 years. But we can't
Mr.
get these
Mr. to that. Can peer consulting activate an individual process for individual schools rather than pulling the whole HBCU community together under the program? Can program support individual schools?
Sir, the program is a 5-year green sustainability program. we start with one by one. One, we've already been to three HBCUs already. And I'm not only called the names. I'm not only called it names, but I would just tell you that the response we got from these Negroes was embarrassing. Okay? Now,
I can imagine that. I can imagine that because okay. I've gone to these HBCUs down here and experienced the same result.
Okay? I know.
But, however, there is a chance for us to revisit these universities, Jackson State University.
Mr. Shirley.
Yes, sir.
We have to revisit these Negroes because that's all we got.
Wait a minute,
Mr. Shirley. We have to revisit these Negroes. That's all we got. The most powerful institutions are our churches and universities because of what they physically own. They have the land.
Right.
The Black Baptist churches, the Black Baptists, all of these. So what I'm saying is, I'm trying to create what they call it. They because everything got to be a sermon for Black folk can hear. So I got to be preaching. This is an economic development template. It can be applied, which it is. That's how we put the PowerPoint together. Now, as I've indicated to you, I will get a notice of non-disclosure signed by you. I will send the information with you. I will let Dr. Abrams know that I'm going to send the information to you so we can coordinate because she can get a piece of whatever you're doing, and you can move on from there. My organization, this is what we do. We are purchasing cooperative. We put companies together to come together on different public-private partnerships with our HBCUs.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason
mm-hmm.
why I founded this organization. That's our mission statement. And we are purchasing cooperative, but with no members, but a few.
Yeah.
And not enough for as long as I've been beating the drum around this issue. But I guess a good friend of mine, he's no longer with us. Brother used to be the mascot for the Dallas Cowboys. His name was Whistling Ray. You remember the brother used to dress up in the cowboy, a garb for the cowboy?
Yeah, I do.
Whistling Ray, well... The gentleman who dressed up in Indian garb was a very, very close personal friend of mine who I managed because I used to have a sports marketing firm. I branded Chief Z. You see him on the NFL sidelines talking about crank up that diesel? Well, I'm the one that told him I came up with all the slogans. The man who put the soul in the burgundy and gold. You're talking about the person who branded him and helped him get out there nationally. So we buried Chief. He passed in. Matter of fact, I'm looking up now. July 27, 2016. It doesn't seem like this year would mark 4 years of Chief Z's being no longer with us, but we were close friends 30 years, brother. I started out with this brother, okay? And what I'm saying is, I've learned things about our people and celebrity, how our leadership thinks. So we're gonna have to revisit this, Mr. Shirley. I've got about 2 more minutes here, and I'm gonna close out the show today. But I want to thank you for taking time from your very busy schedule to join us. And I think we hit upon a lot of topics and issues that need to be discussed in our community, and it needs to be really really made clear, if somebody else different comes in that chair up here, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, on the Democratic ticket, with as much capital as the African American vote has put in putting Biden in making him the next president of the United States, we shouldn't be whistling the same song.
We
need to sit down.
Be whistling the same song. This country owes us, and the next president owes us, and I'm sure we're gonna benefit.
Well,
let me just say this.
Yes,
sir.
Please do.
Okay, I am just overwhelmed with your program and what you're doing and your line of thinking on this as a huge economic problem, that economic development problem that we have. You know, I'm writing a book on the same thing, how we're missing the boat on economic development, solar-based economic development, because our leaders are not looking. They're paying no attention. So it would be a big honor for me to introduce the Positive Change Initiative to peer consulting to at least Jackson State University, the interim president.
That's why I want to get the information down there to you, Mr. Shirley. Look, brother. The clock on the wall says that's all. So we got to go because the show is getting ready to end.
All right.
But believe me, you won't be a stranger to this show. So could you just leave contact information for our listening audience? People want to get in contact with you. Could you leave your number and email address, please?
Yes, my telephone number is Erica 601. Wait a minute, the name of the company is Sundial Solar Power Developers. My name is Will Shirley, who is the principal at the company. The telephone number is 601-985-8352. The website is www.sundial. That again, the number is 601-985-8352. That's my personal cell number. So that's a better way to get in touch with me. The office number, of course, is 601-272-2480. And let me repeat that. Office number is 601-272-2480. The website, www.sundialsolar, that's SUNDIALSOLAR, sundialsolar, all one word, .us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Shirley. And you know the show will be online about 4 minutes after you get off the air, so you can send people to the website and stream over Facebook, Twitter, and links, so they'll be able to get the show. So it's out there. So it's not a problem. But once again, I want to thank you for taking time from your very, very busy schedule to be a guest on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Until next week, we say go in peace here on the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Until next week.
Why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. Thank you.
singing. I got trouble. Sing it.